Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage. I'm Tor Norby from the Android Studio team.
I'm Romain Guy from the Android Toolkit team. Today we have a special guest.
I'm Chad Haas from Chicago, but I'm not a... what am I doing here? Hi.
Yeah, who let you in?
The receptionist.
And today I'm Jamal Eason, product manager on Android Studio.
And I'm Xavier Ducroy. I'm tech lead for Android Studio.
All right, we have a lot of studio in the house. And the reason is we are celebrating our 10-year anniversary, right? So we shipped Studio 1.0, in December 2014, so it's been 10 years.
And I would like to point out that Tor is way more prepared than he normally is. Look at that, he printed like 4 pages, double-sided, he has a whole agenda.
Yeah, but it has nothing to do with the podcast, it's just stuff that he's going to read before we talk.
I have a confession to make. So I thought it would be good to talk about the different releases of Android Studio. And I started
one
like,
by one.
Every single one.
It's quarterly releases, right?
Hold on. So I was like, I started a little search looking for like release notes. I'm like, this is going to take forever. So then I went to Gemini and said, hey, summarize all the version numbers. And it did a pretty admirable job. Now, I would be skeptical to like, you know, get like a history lesson from an AI. We all know the pitfalls. But I will say that this saved me a lot of time because it took 3 minutes. And when you know the domain, this is what Gemini's good at. You can skim and go like, yeah, that seems about right. So this is, you know, I may say some things that are wrong today, but it's going to be right-ish because it's in the right time frame. So for example,
what
like-
this tells me that you can't even remember what happened to your own product.
Look at, like, I was thinking that Gemini must have hallucinated because I was looking at the first year after 1.0 and it's like 1.2 was in April. 1.3 was in July. I mean, we released Android Studio 2, 3, 4, and 5 all in 11 months. So we had like a faster release cadence.
So many bugs.
I think it was before we kind of went to the, I don't remember. We didn't do 12 canaries per stable release back then, right? So we actually did a lot.
But what you're saying is that instead of people actually listening to or watching this podcast, they should just go ask some AI bot somewhere what happened in Android Studio for the last minute.
If they also worked on the product for 12 years, then yes. So that you can like, yeah, that seems about right.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So let's this history lesson. What was before Studio Zav?
Before Studio.
Yeah. Well, let's say after Vi and Emacs, but before Studio.
Okay. For Android specifically, because I'm sure there's a long gap between Vi and Android, but we had Eclipse, which was different. actually, before my time, right, there was a couple of tools that were standalone written using the Eclipse toolkit, SWT. So there was DDMS and there was TraceView. And when I joined, there was no IDE. And Eclipse was really the only choice. IntelliJ was not open source. And so very first thing I did actually when I joined the team was splitting DDMS in 3 different sections, right? There was DDMLib, just a pure library, and then some code, and then the glue. And I replaced the glue with Eclipse itself, with the idea to integrate DDMS in Eclipse.
So for the listeners who've never experienced DDMS, DDMS was a tool that we would use as a debugger bridge of some sort?
It would connect to the device and then open a local port, and then you would connect your debugger, whatever you wanted, to that local port, and then it would basically use ADB to forward that to the device. And it would show like Logcat, it would show a couple of things. There was a few features in there.
And then TraceView was our first profiler of some sort. It was a method tracer.
So DDMS stands for Dalvik.
Debugging Monitor Service.
And that, just to confuse the Eclipse story a bit more, then individual utility tools would also come into being, like Hierarchy Viewer, which was a swing app, which didn't run in...
was like no central architecture, right? So like here's a tool Romain wrote in Groovy. Check it in, right? Like there were all these random contributions.
Hey, but I created your favorite thing in the world, Lint.
It's a precursor to Lint, yes. So I think back then Eclipse was really the market leader, right? Like it was, I mean, there were other things. In fact, I worked on one of the competitors, that means. But Eclipse, I think, was clearly the thing that Java developers expected. And so I think by integrating with that, it was like a natural, like if you were a Java developer, oh, look at this. There's some similarity that you can apply to Android.
Yes. Also, it was easy. I didn't have to redo all the UI. So that's why I went that way. There was an ANT file also. One ANT file that called APT and Java C and DX.
That was the build system?
That was the build system, which we kind of kept going for a very long time until Studio already.
That was a thing that in in those days, you had built a whole build system inside Eclipse and a whole separate build system outside of it.
I wouldn't say a build system. There was a couple of build steps, right? There was three build steps. When you have an Eclipse project, you have a step that runs all the time as soon as a file changes, that just compiles the code. So we put a step before that to run APT in order to generate the R class. And then you put a step after that that would run DX at the time, and then whatever we had to create an APK, which was probably just like zip. And that was it. That's the build system.
APT, yeah. But the point is, there was no overlap with what you were doing from the command line.
Right.
Like, so you both natively integrated in IDE, and you had a standalone command line. And you loved it so much that when the time came for Studio, you were like, let's not do that ever again.
Well, we heard from a lot of people that they were, you know, hacking around in their Unscript, and then nothing worked in the IDE. And then there was no really like concept of dependencies. Eclipse had a way of linking different projects in your workspace, which a workspace is not really a project, right? It's just whatever. It's just a place where you have a bunch of projects which could be related or not related. And you could link them together. So we supported that. But then in Ant, there was no concept of building like a thing and then consuming it. And because we can't build jar because we have way more than just jar, there was just no way to have dependencies in Ant. And it was just like a big mess. I don't know how we survived that long without any
apps
better
system.
Apps
were a lot simpler and a lot smaller.
They were a lot simpler. Yeah, we did not have Android X and all the dependencies. Or we started having support library.
Well, support library, you copied a source into your project.
That wasn't as many, right?
No, but it was a major pain to maintain.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the other point was that the different inconsistencies. So you do your build on the IDE, the build on the command line. You're like, are these similar?
Do I get the same binary?
Well, because people would, you know, Ant was let you actually put code in it, like Gradle, right? So you could put tasks in there. And so people would create variants through code. So like, okay, I've written my base app. Now I can derive six versions of it. But that, of course, only worked from the command line. So it was yet another problem. So I had joined by this point, and I was working on the Eclipse plugin. And people like you working on the platform, you weren't using Eclipse. What gives?
Was I using Eclipse? I was using Eclipse to write C++ code, but I was using IntelliJ to write Java code.
And I was using Eclipse to poke around a little bit in native code and otherwise to run the debugger.
Yeah, so the point I was trying to make is that people who were working on, well, not on building Android apps, but building, well, basically writing Java code.
Because
they all prefer.
Because you guys never created the support for the platform, so we couldn't use your Android plugin.
All right, well, I was trying to make the opposite point, which is that IntelliJ is a better IDE, right?
I agree with you.
And so we're like, hey, why don't we have that? Right? If people are given the choice for what kind of Java editor are not choosing Eclipse, why are we?
Because Eclipse was open source and free.
Yes, that's where it started, right?
You know,
started,
but
in between the two, yes, it became
open
source.
By now, it had been open sourced, and so that's when I think you talked to JetBrains and
I don't remember exactly what led to it, but
weren't there other reasons? I vaguely recall you, Xavier and Tor, telling me that maintenance in Eclipse.
Yes. I think IBM was doing a lot of the work, and then they sort of
they seemed to lose full interest.
The Java support was at a standstill for a while?
It was complete. I mean, this was in the time when they were doing E4. So it was a new architecture, and it seemed like they were in love with architecture. I should be careful what I say now. I don't want to offend anyone. But so many of the improvements were all about, you know, switching UI stacks, and like the core feature set didn't seem to move a lot.
So that's because
the What's New Pages got shorter and shorter for every release, as it seemed like IBM had moved on. And so
I think it's important to clarify for listeners who are not familiar with Eclipse. So Eclipse was two things. There was Eclipse the IDE that a lot of people were using as an IDE, but it was built on top of something called the RCP, the Rich Client Platform. And so that was also a product in itself, where it was a platform that companies could use to build their own desktop app, right?
And that's the problem, right? Like E4 was basically all about using CSS to customize that UI so that people could create their own, you know, custom-looking application using all that framework. And
the companies were invested
because there's no company behind it. I mean, IBM at the beginning, but it was mostly just people contributing what they needed and what people needed.
I want to be clear because we may sound like we're judging Eclipse, and just like any piece of software, it has its pros and cons. But the priorities that were put in Eclipse were different from what we needed. And that's not, that doesn't mean Eclipse is bad. If you love Eclipse, that's great. It's just, it was going in a direction that was not helping us.
And I seem to remember conversations at the time too with your team and other people that were working on some of the core library stuff where it's like, hey, I'm having a really hard time, you know, in the debugger because of this or in the something. And the answer was like, yeah, but that's kind of a fundamental thing that we don't really have control over. Like somebody needs to advance that and nobody is doing that. And
yeah, I remember filing bugs and having them all prioritized P3. Yeah. And so when we started working on Studio with JetBrains, it was like such an incredible difference when you would like race issues and they were addressed and that. So that helped a lot. So a lot of things we did.
Well, because there was an alignment in the priorities.
Yes. Right?
They're building an IDE, we wanted an IDE.
To be fair, Eclipse is open source. We could have contributed it.
Yeah.
We just didn't have the bandwidth
for it.
But
we were like four people.
I know.
Team in an office.
But the contribution was difficult as well, right? Because there was a whole consortium of companies behind Eclipse. And so getting something into Eclipse was not... And you can see, for instance, that I don't know if it has been solved since then, but back then there were three different C++ plugins, one from Intel, one from the Eclipse Foundation itself, because they couldn't agree on the right way. So,
and I remember I wanted to implement, like this was when I started working on Lint. And I was like, okay, I want light bulbs next to the errors. And I discovered that in Eclipse, the light bulb feature was written in the Java editor. It wasn't like core infrastructure that languages tap into. It was like, it was there. And then I looked at, well, how is this done in JavaScript? Well, the JavaScript plugin looked like it had been copy-pasted from Java and like with a bunch of renames, right? So the other thing that I really was impressed by when I started looking at the IntelliJ code base was their PSI concept. The fact that they have like cross-language modeling of abstract syntax trees that you can resolve from one language to the other. So like it's very common in IntelliJ to like go to declaration from a Java reference into a bundle file or whatever. That was all core supported. It wasn't something each... you know, that you'd have to like collaborate between the plugins in the same way.
Because it's driven by one company. Like Eclipse, for all of its faults, it's many company contributing, doing what's the bare minimum to get the feature they want. And that's it, which is understandable, right?
Yeah. So that's how we ended up thinking, hey, let's go to this other thing.
Well, I would also like to add that one of the benefits of IntelliJ, you know, to go back to the point you were making earlier, purely as a code editor for Java at least, it was, I would say, much better than Eclipse, right? Like there was, and probably because JetBrains is and was selling IntelliJ, so they were putting a lot of thoughts in, like a lot. It was not like a single feature. To me, it was always like a ton of like small features that would add together. And at the end of the day, you'll feel more productive.
Like their tagline is develop with pleasure. And I think that there's something to that so many things feel really thought out. And they have a very long record of sort of innovating in the IDE, you know, that are often copied elsewhere, right? And I don't want to like list specific things because it's possible there was a precursor to some of them, but like we just kept seeing that they did stuff. For example, like showing while you're debugging, all of a sudden they put in fake comments in your source code showing what the variable is. Like that was just such a nice thing. And they just had so many features like that. So I remember when we started working on Studio, just looking at what they had and being inspired by it and then mapping it to Android. So for example, for Java, they would do code folding to make like an anonymous call look like a Lambda. So they could like drop three lines into like a nice Lambda thing. And I was like, well, that's cool. And then, so we implemented that for resources. So instead of showing r.string.foo, we can fold and show the resolved default value, for example. So we just kind of went through all of their features and mapped it. And this just wouldn't have been possible in Eclipse.
I was going to ask for context before we sort of then move into, okay, and then we had Studio. Jay, when did you arrive relative to all of this stuff?
You know, I was attending Google I/O 2013, watching the DevTools session, and then there's this big unveil of
Android Studio. That's where we showed the version 0.1.
Okay, so you came.
I was an attendee.
Yeah.
And then for a number of things that happened, I moved to Google and I was like, I like Android stuff. And it was like, we have this role on Android DevTools. Like, I've heard of Android Studio. I did ADT Eclipse and surprise, surprise, you know, here we are. But yeah, there was a bit of a journey to that product, but that's how I got first involved, was sort of watching it. And then
so you were there quite near to the beginning of Studio, but you weren't here for the Eclipse fun. Well, actually, no, it was a couple of years as a developer.
I used the product. And
That's why he joined. He's like, oh, they're done with Eclipse. Okay, now I can try.
Yeah, and it wasn't the case. We just talked about DDMS earlier. It wasn't the case that here comes 1.0, Eclipse is dead.
Right.
You know, we still had to support it. Now, I will be 100% honest that the support was very, very minimal. It was like, okay, well, how little can we get away with?
So it was basically, the team was small, so there was...
Yes, exactly. So what we did was we fixed things we had to, like make it work with the new Android SDK. It came out, and I think the bytecode in the SDK switched to require Java 7, so we had to do something for that. But we also couldn't completely deprecate it because the new studio was missing things. It was missing DDMS, which we just talked about. The other thing, it didn't actually support accessibility. Right, and we, you know, Google has a requirement for us to support accessibility, and it's the right thing to do. Right, so we actually have to go in there and work on adding screen reader support to the editor in IntelliJ, which we contributed.
But I think the writing was on the wall for a little bit. I mean, I think I drafted the blog post. I said update to Android development, and people were like,
an update on.
I think most of the community was excited about the IntelliJ movement, similar to you mentioned earlier. We had a lot of people who were really, you know, excited about Eclipse, to be honest with you. So when we made the move, we had little templates that migrated you over from Eclipse and it helped you guide there. But it you know, we had stragglers for like even after end of life.
Retrospect, I think, you know, our timing, it's funny because Chet, in your book, right, when you were asking a bunch of engineers who were there for Android 1.0, like a common answer to the question of what worked, like how did this work out? It was right place at the right time. And I think this switch, it was painful, right? But our development community was a lot smaller than it is today. The feature set was a lot smaller. Can you imagine if tomorrow you said, hey, we have to change IDE platform, like the amount of work that has to be recreated is massive, right?
Yeah, and like, so we had it was clearly better. You know, there's a few things missing, but like your day-to-day experience, like with the source editor in terms of all the refactoring and intention actions and highlighting, like that first... The demo at the Canary even, but also the 1.0 demo, you know, we had so many nice things. So once people saw what they could do, it was like clearly an improvement. So I remember from the first I/O, May 2013, when we unveiled it, that was back before they had a separate developer keynote. It was like just the Google I/O keynote. And, you know, my impression was that the executives thought the developer stuff, that was the studio announcement and some Play developer console, that was the boring stuff. So they wanted to get that out of the way. And then they were going to get to like Google Plus announcements. They had some stuff for Google Maps. And so that was like the really good stuff the press was there for. And they were really surprised that the biggest applause of the day was for the Android Studio announcement.
Because the
audience in the room wasn't, I mean, there was some press, but almost everyone else there at I/O, it was all Android developers, let's face it.
Yep.
And so that audience knew exactly what this was and how impactful it was.
As a user, I would love to hear your take on this, but also I feel like the difference I got from Android Studio versus what we did with Eclipse is, you know, IDE stands for Integrated Development Environment. And I feel Android Studio embodies that more than Eclipse. So the problem with Eclipse is that it has the faults of its benefits and the other way around, where it's a collection of plugins, and I get the same feel sometimes with Visual Studio. So, you know, our ADT plugin felt like one more plugin in the UI. It didn't feel like an Android IDE.
It was certainly intentional, because I remember one of the things I first worked on was like, hey, what are all the tools we collected? I mean, we're creating a slide of like 20 different ad hoc things. It's like, well, how do we sort of integrate one by one in there? Because you're right, because essentially before it's like, hey, I want to write code, I got a bug, I use C++. It was a collection of things. And, you know, my view is if we want to kind of have an end-to-end experience, let's have all that together and have a guided path, because, you know, people don't think it's difficult now. Back then it was a loose collection of tools, and so it was quite difficult. So,
and well, I'm sure you can customize Eclipse to get there, but
Eclipse has this... Was it like perspective?
Yes.
Where you can just switch the whole UI. So we had a DMS perspective that hides all the editor and gets you into this
view.
But it looks different, right? You have many of them and they don't connect together.
I will say we did recognize this problem, right? Where, hey, go to eclipse.org for your IDE, get this plugin, point them together. This wasn't great. So we actually, and it's mostly forgotten now. Towards the end of the Android Eclipse era, we actually made a whole distribution. right? So we actually did put together our own Splash. We made a distro of Eclipse.
Oh, you didn't have to enter the URL of the server that had the plugin anymore?
No, it was all configured out of the box to work together. So we did have like a downloadable Eclipse-based IDE with its own Splash screen and so on. But
was that only for Windows?
Yeah.
No, I think it was... Yeah, I'm not talking installer. Like, we probably had that too, but I'm talking, we had a distro. I remember it because I
remember downloading it. Yeah. I also remember I used to have like the public site and then the special tool site. I was like, what's this tool site? What's the special
site? The difference was we the team, had, it was like our own thing where we could just write stuff to it. And it was really, really, really freedom.
Well, and there were also things that we never integrated back then. And it took us a while, even in Android Studio, for instance, the emulator, right? And even today, it's still, I mean, under the hood, it's a separate app. It's just we happen to show its screen inside Studio, but...
Yeah, we certainly had a lot more command line tools. I think they're also very important to have those things, but, you know, in the recent years, we said, hey, like, you know, most people want to run their app in the emulator, let's make it integrated to Experience. And before, it's sort of the standalone window, and it creates some accessibility issues that came there, but yeah, this is one of those plans where, like, how do you make it sort of more seamless instead of having, like, disparate tools around?
But I like the fact that we still kept Hierarchy Viewer out of it. Right, you just looked at the author. You're like, no, that person's stuff doesn't belong.
Then there was Are you talking about Leon Spector? Is this something different than Leon Spector?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's funny because at first, the first version of Hierarchy Viewer was written in Swing, so we couldn't put it in Eclipse. And then we hired someone who rewrote it in SWT, which is what Eclipse was using. But then we switched to Android Studio, which was written in Swing. So we really didn't want it to make its way into the IDE.
I got the message.
Fab, you want to disagree with me?
No. I mean, the emulator is always going to stay separate, right? You say, under the hood, it's a separate project. It's always going to stay like that.
Yeah,
right?
No.
Which is fine. The user doesn't care.
My point
is
that we're doing the work to hide that fact.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. Right now we have this hacky thing where the options are really separate, and I think that we will fix. Mm-hmm. But having the UI be native inside a Studio where it participates in window management, Command Shift F12, you know, maximize, obviously, unmaximize. I think that's really nice. I used to have to like toggle windows and tile them to stripe, and that's not fun. So that's the right user interface.
But you know, you did that Gemini research. So what do you want to talk about? This the 0.5 release?
I was going to ask, Android 1.0, Android Studio 1.0, like that release, did it go smoothly? Do you have any regrets about that launch? Like
the path to that release, because it took us 2 years, actually more than that. I think we started in 2012.
Yeah, December 2012 was the first commit.
So is that why Jay was wearing a beta?
So beta was to get to 1.0 was a
year and a half, basically from the May announcement of 0.1. Beta was 0.8. And I don't have it written down when that date was, but it was probably sometime in the end of 20.
I felt like we didn't have as much rigor on code names, so we were just sort of like, oh, it's a 0.1, 0.9. When do we do 2? I don't know, 2. What is 2?
Feels like a 0.3. Okay.
I mean, I think the release process back then was basically eye contact, like, hey, should we release today? Sounds good.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And I think, you know, the product was a little less complex than it is today. And as I mentioned earlier, the projects have gotten more complex. But, you know, then it was like, you know, could sort of validate things. But I think 2.0 was that instant run? Was that the
2.0 was instant run.
Yeah.
That was a pretty big deal. I think we all have some thoughts on it.
So the precursor to that was like, hey, builds are slow, editing's slow. We understand that. How do we fix this problem? And then I think some prototypes happened some months prior where we could say, hey, how do we sort of skip steps and like edit in real time? But it was a big splash. We had the Android Summit when that launched, I believe.
Yeah, I think we were too ambitious, basically. Like, what I think works really well about Live Edit and Compose is that we control the entire environment. So instead of saying this works on all old API levels and it works for all libraries, you know, like with Instant Run, we tried to monkey patch the live data structures on different versions of the OS. Like, oh, hey, there's a font cache over in that data structure on Android API level 12. Let's use Reflection to go clear that out. Like, we were always chasing this long tail of problems. And with Live Edit, it's like, no, it's for this. And that works much better. So, you know, I think we had good intentions, but we probably should have limited it more to say, okay, it only works for new API levels. That's what you're doing.
Let's say the demo that we have the live chess game. I think Roman, you put the 3D animation together. Yeah. It looked really good.
Cool. Anytime you get Roman involved in the demo, you're going to get some beautiful, probably.
Hey, I have to make your stuff look less boring.
I remember, I think it was that tool that mostly what it did for me was tell me that it couldn't do the thing that I asked it to do. That was pretty common. Like you push the button and then it thinks for a bit and it says, yeah, not today.
Huh.
It actually makes things worse probably because there was a build-time component that we did more stuff during build to try to help.
It was
after,
really good at like pure code, but the second you had persistent state, and that was typically related to resources, the second you're trying to like change something related to resource, font, glyph, something, that's when.
But even without that, right? Like that's one of the things that's extremely difficult about this type of feature. If you modify the memory layout of a class, then what do you do about all your existing instances? You know, how do you reinitialize that code?
We did something naughty. We basically went and modified all the classes, right? You know, at build time to have one level of indirection. In computer science, you can solve anything with one level of indirection. That's what we did. Anyway, I want to talk about Studio 3.0.
What happened then? Remind us.
3.0 was when we announced Kotlin support.
Oh, yes.
So this was basically, you know, 2017. So
yes, I think it's interesting you mentioned the story about people were using IntelliJ prior to this. I think Kotlin was, we have these ongoing research studies with our top developers and communities. We'd be like, hey, Kotlin. You're like, yeah, Kotlin. And I think there's a lot of vibe around that experience. So just to be honest with you, we didn't like hatch it ourselves. I think community was like, hey, like what's this look like? And I think obviously partnering with JetBrains, they made a big investment in this language, which I, you know, add a lot of attractive components to it that, you know, yes, the announcement happened, but there's a lot of pre-steps that happened to that ahead of time. But anyway, what are your thoughts on that Kotlin experience?
I think I've told this story on this podcast before because we've had a bunch of episodes on Kotlin, but my first experience with Kotlin was doing the IntelliJ merge. And we had modified a Java file and I merged it and my diff was gone and it was deleted with this weird file called .kt. And it was and it was using extension functions, which I had never seen. I mean,
Ruby.
It was doing like
Ruby has
there's a method on that there is no such method. I didn't read, you know, and so that was kind of my foray into it. And after that, JetBrains started asking us to support it, and we kind of did it off the books, right? So like Lint supported Kotlin before we officially supported Kotlin, right? Because so we started using it internally, but that to make Google actually go and say we support it was a big deal. Right? Because like, well, we had to make sure that we were in alignment with JetBrains on the direction of the language. If we support it, we can never take it away. Well, I don't mean that's not a legally binding statement, to be clear. but like, it wouldn't be great, right? If everyone starts writing code and suddenly like, we're like, we changed our mind. Right. So we wanted to make sure we were sure that this was the right step. And so it took a lot of heavy lifting internally to make it happen.
And I think there were a lot of people externally who were already using it. Like they were going to use it in that half-baked situation because they found so much benefit to use from the language.
But we also heard people were so excited because this would allow them to tell their boss, because a lot of them were using it for tests, you know, like you can't use this in production, but you can use it for all this other stuff. And so like this was like us saying it's officially supported enabled someone to go to their...
It's always a big deal. I think, you know, if Google's like, hey, this is officially supported, it adds legitimacy to the project, not some sort of side effort. And so whenever we do anything, actually any conference, people are like, hey, does Google do this? How does Google do this? And so I think just having that aspect did empower all those side projects now to have like, yes,
In this particular case for us, it meant in the tool, it meant like if you run into a problem and Kotlin stops working, after the announcement, it was, we're going to fix it.
Yeah.
Before the announcement, like, yeah, we'll fix it when we can. Maybe.
And I think it was helpful, actually, that, you know, that Kotlin comes from JetBrains. And so they were already starting to use Kotlin in our code base. So we had it. We had no choice, right? Like, you know, so I was able to say to the team, we can use this because this is the platform code. Whether or not it's supported for Android is a whole separate story, right? But like it did give us experience with Kotlin and go like, wow, this is really, really nice. I never want to go back to Java now.
The other day, I had to write Java code, and I kept forgetting to put my semicolons at the end of the...
Well, speaking of the Kotlin announcement, that, you know, we mentioned how there was like a huge surprise to some applause for Studio. Kotlin announcement was also, I think, like, you know, just a massive...
I was thinking the common element here is all of our big applause breaks were for integrating technology from JetBrains.
Yeah. What else can we integrate?
If you want to generalize a little bit, it was when we bring developers something they really, really wanted.
Yep. To Jay's point earlier, I remember we had and have ongoing conversation with developers about, like, you know, help us understand what our priorities are. What is it that you need so that we are sure that we're not missing things? And we would occasionally say, so what about that language? Do you have problems? You know, and nobody was asking, like, that was never a priority for anybody to go in a particular language direction unless you mentioned Kotlin. They're like, oh, yeah.
I mean, we had requests about pretty much any language out there, right? Some folks wanted Scala, some folks wanted other things.
But it was always niche.
But the interop, I think, is key. And I think also we had converters to Java and Kotlin. It was a natural progression.
There was a huge migration story baked into Kotlin itself, which greatly helped, honestly, like, yeah, because even internally, right, Google, we have our own languages like Go, so there were people asking, well, why didn't you pick Go? And the answer, honestly, is like, it has nothing to do with Go itself. It's more, it doesn't compile to the same thing. You can't call Java from Go, you can't call Go from Java, so it's a no-go, right? Like, we need a solution that developers could start adopting piecemeal, because by now, contrary to the Eclipse days, the apps were huge, and, you know, teams were made of, like, dozens or hundreds of developers, and we need to, like, think about that when we make decisions. Same story with Compose, by the way, right? Like, Chet, you were there at the beginning. Like, a huge part of how we designed Compose was, how do we make that work with the existing Vue system?
I will say, when we mentioned Compose initially, we had a couple of code names. We're like, okay, great. So no tools for that? So it was a lot of brainstorming, I think, along that line of, like, how do we evolve our, you know, historical tools in XML, think about it, Compose and Kotlin based development.
Can't you give me a visual designer that would just understand the code that's written and regenerate the code and you go back and forth, right? How hard could it be?
How hard could it be? Because honestly, prior we had this tool called LayoutLib, which would render XML, and, you know, it did a pretty good job. But then Kotlin was a whole other beast to make for UI for that. So that was like definitely a big shift for us to make that happen.
Did you find another tangent to go off on?
Well, not on that, so that's why I'm just sitting here silently. I was thinking Gemini had forgotten our C-line integration, but it didn't.
Oh, yes.
I guess it wasn't a major version. So in Studio 2.1, like, one of the big remaining complaints we kept getting after we shipped Studio, after we had addressed accessibility and the DDMS, was, like, people using the Android NDK.
That's right.
You're accessing, you need some C++ code, you know. And we just, like, that is a big thing to write, and that was not part of IntelliJ's open source product.
Yeah,
And so I think you were pretty involved in negotiating that with JetBrains, because, you know, we license, this is part of the stuff that is not open source.
That's right. So for those who want to build Android Studio from source code, you may run into the fact, like, I can't run certain parts of it. This is one of those parts. You know, honestly, you know, people doing native development code, we found a lot of developers had support libraries. Like, how would you do camera? I'm not going to rewrite the camera library. It's going to get a library. That's C++. But you need the sort of the tool chain to support this.
Well, it's one of those things, right? It matters to a small percentage of developers. But to those developers, it is critical. They can't live without it.
It's critical. But I would say a lot of developers do have these dependencies that are C++. Right. So we work with JetBrains to make a kind of strategic license agreement on behalf of Android and make it focused. So we did sort of take, you know, aspects of the C-line product and brought that inside of Android Studio, but made it very focused on Android development to get it to unlock.
We added JNI support, for example, that wasn't there in C-line.
For exactly. So there were some holdouts back to my Eclipse part. Like, I need Eclipse for C++. I was like, okay, well, we'll solve that with this problem. So yeah, 2.1, people just assume it's part of the product, but it does take work for us to maintain that and integrate that. But it just kind of complements the whole story together, having all the languages supported in one product.
Yeah, for one, I'm grateful you did that work, because I use it regularly.
There's one other topic I want to. I know Jay, you had limited time today. You only have like 5 minutes left, I think. And I want to talk about the code names, because you know that's something we work together closely on. And I think we were very disappointed that Android stopped using code names, and we like code names. And
I know you keep talking about them.
Well, you know, we were going to try to unify our version numbers with IntelliJ numbers. And I still struggle to refer to IntelliJ releases. You know, like, I know what they are, but I'm like 2024.2, you know, or sometimes I remember the branch name, you know.
It's like that scene in Big where he asked for Tom Hanks's Social Security number. Just keep throwing out numbers until they think they've got the answer they needed. Like, that's my understanding.
I just think codenames is so established an industry, and so we worked on it, and we did. It kind of went in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
And, like, what's your perspective?
It was interesting, because we had, you start going, like, you know, Android Studio 1.x or 2.0, and as I said, we struggled with like when the dot release would happen. But I think we were trying to make a clear indication of a few things. One was we were moving to being clear separation between Gradle and Android Studio, so it's like one part of the equation. Two, we're trying to have more tied releases to IntelliJ. One pain point we heard from developers was like, hey, you know, you're 6 months, 8 months behind IntelliJ. Why don't you have this merge quicker? So,
and they had no idea what the correspondence was.
So when you actually map out those numbers, they turned out to be like a seven-digit number to be precisely accurate what that would be. And obviously that wasn't going to work to give people seven-digit numbers. And so, okay, let's introduce code names. Now, ironically, you know, there's a whole story perhaps you covered before how Android has code names and how we still have code names. But for us, it's like, hey, let's just have a simpler way to address these things with code names. So we were like, well, should we use desserts, animals, states, countries?
We should have used desserts and reused all the desserts at Android just to make things super confusing.
Or we could have picked a better dessert. Because sometimes I was like, that's the one you chose?
I'm with you. Some of those choices are...
Yeah.
So after, I think Torna had a number of different spreadsheets of code combinations, A through Z and all these different things. So we landed on animals, kind of keep it as international as possible. So I think it's worked pretty well. I mean, there's no perfect system.
I like that we went all in and the animals are in the splash screens.
We talk about them. So, that, you know, I'll tell you, it's not a perfect system. There are some edges around this, but it's...
Well, the whole feature drop thing we're doing now is complicated. I don't know if Xavi, you want to add anything. Well, but you know, like we've made it a little complicated because we didn't want to burn through all of our animal names at twice the clip.
So I have a question. So we have those animal names and code names, but now there's so many of them that if you ask me the difference between hedgehog and ladybug, I'd be like,
well, you don't need to know, but the part of the reason we were really insistent that we wanted them to be alphabetical, so you can always know which one came later, assuming, Chet and Roman, that you know the alphabet. Like, but if you know the alphabet, then...
All right, I'm out.
Then you can basically figure out which one came before the other, and that's kind of the...
That's
one
the
of
main
the
point, yeah.
I as opposed to numbers, you know...
From you, though. Like, you've got animals. It's not that hard to add antenna to them, right? I mean, let's make these animals Android-specific. So there's a feature request for product.
But yeah, it's certainly fun. We've actually, for the team, we actually do overall surveys. So the team gets to vote on them. We kind of vote on them. So it's kind of an internal game. But yeah, it's been interesting. But yeah, it's one little fun fact on the process. Well, I do have to drop, folks.
All right.
It's been
thanks great. For joining.
Don't tune out, everyone. We're going to keep talking.
Thanks, Jay.
Thanks.
See you.
Animal names with letters, because, you know, with numbers, it's really hard to know which number can be or another number.
But what's more annoying is I don't really like the fact that sometimes it's the adjective, like, or the qualifier, like Arctic fox, it's an A, but it's really a fox, it's an F. And so
yeah, I kind of, like, honestly, I think we moved
away from that.
I was inspired by, I think it was like Ubuntu or someone, they always had like two words. I thought that had like a nice ring to it. You know?
But it was the same letter starting with.
Sure. Yeah.
What it should say is Fox, parentheses, Arctic. Yeah. That would solve your problem. Right?
Yeah, but then
for F, not for
this
A.
This was actually right. An A release.
Version 2.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. What was Arctic Fox an A?
It was the very first version.
Yeah. Okay.
We had Electric Eel, which it's the same letter, so it's fine. But yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We learned our lesson.
So... do you have a favorite version of Android Studio?
Nightly.
Same question for Zev.
Nightly.
I was going to say the last one, but I don't. Nightly is a little bit.
No, but I mean, was there a specific version of Studio where we shipped something that you're really proud of, or like some improvement we've made that you think was made developers' life better, like something that stands out?
For example, I'm wearing my favorite Android T-shirt, but it's also my favorite Android release. Like I always felt attached to this release because of the stuff that we did.
Tell the listeners what it is.
I'm looking at a camera. Maybe you can see it. Jelly Bean.
Yeah, but honestly, the T-shirt for Honeycomb that Dan Sandler did was even nicer.
But not the best logo. The logo itself, like,
talk about Honeycomb today, please.
Okay, all right, fine. I can't answer that question.
It's like choosing between your, you know,
your favorite child.
Yeah, favorite child.
Yeah, there's many good ones. There's some that I would like to forget.
For me, just a blur. You know, I'll go with the first one. I think the first one was the massive change compared. It took us a long time. You know, that was the, from an achievement point of view, that was like the biggest one, really. After that, we started releasing on a very frequent basis. And so it's just like...
But how about, you know, Project Marble or Applied Changes?
You know what? Actually, that is my favorite.
See? I know
you. I will say that. So like, so we had this, you know, this annual I.O. talk, right, where we kind of present what's new. And that's really fun. And I get to do the demo and cover Gradle, you know, and other things, right? But that was the, you know, and so usually... I remember Zav was like, wow, they clap even for things they've had for 6 months. And it's like, yeah, people haven't really seen it, right? But the year we
did
Marble. It's hard
to keep up with the change logs.
Like Marble, I pushed for very hard too, because like I'm really, you know, I felt like, some of these bugs are embarrassing. Like we need to fix it. And so that year to go out and not do a demo and instead highlight all the amazing things the Eng team had done. Because by now we had a large team. And this was like a very deliberate effort. So you know, we had tiger teams to address like cross-functional problems and to basically go through and talk about, you know, the dashboards we built to track live crashes in the field. Like we did client-side heap analysis. So if we run low on memory, we will capture
So we'll use more of your memory.
And then on the next time when you run, we can then analyze it. So we found leaks that were actually in third-party plugins, and we sent those leak reports to the third-party plugin. They're like, thank you. You know, we've heard about this, but we could never figure it out, right? So like, and there was just like a long list of things like that. And so I still have people say, hey, can you do another Marble? And we probably should, arguably.
Can you add my name to the list?
Yeah. No, so actually, I'm glad you remind, because that isn't on here, actually.
So actually, you mentioned, you know, and now we have a large team, and there's, you know, large teams all around for all the stuff that's happening in Android. I think it's worth calling out how small the teams were. Yeah. We don't really talk about how many people are on teams now. I think it's fair to talk more specifics about teams long ago. When I joined in 2010, I believe there were two people working on our entire tool system. It was Zav and Raphael. Am I correct about that?
Well, and David was here.
Yeah, David worked on emulator as part of his job.
He was doing other things.
So. And I think I was the next person. So like, I remember there were 2.5 people when I joined. Yeah. And see, I came from Sun Microsystems and, you know, there were quite a few people working on tools there. And so I joined this is 2010, when Android already had 25% market share, I think, in terms of smartphones in the US. Like it was already an established success. And I was expecting to join a pretty large team. And I was like, what? So I'm the third full-time engineer on this?
We didn't ask you to join the tools team. We asked you to be the tools team, yes. Which is actually Zav's experience, right? Like yes. You were the tools team. The same was true across other places. But like the tools, I remember you, it would come up in all hands a lot that like it was an ongoing request from you, like, could we please have some help in tools? And it was just ridiculous the amount of stuff that was coming out of the tools team.
Got a ton of help. Like they didn't write ADB, someone else wrote TraceView, I wrote HierarchyViewer. Look, there were so many people working on tools on the weekend and at night.
Yeah, so there was a lot of growth in 2017. I still think our team is undersized, to be clear. Right? Like, you know, I believe that teams in comparable companies are bigger.
Tor, you know that your manager is not listening to this podcast, right?
Yeah. No, I'm just being honest. Like, people, you know, I think people are like, why don't you do more? And like, well, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah, work faster.
Yeah. Any memories?
There's that funny memory. Like, you know, before we switched to IntelliJ, we had a meeting with Hiroshi about, you know, is this the right thing to do? You know, what happens if relationship go bad with JetBrains, all of that? And we said, well, if things go bad, we'll invest and keep doing ourselves. And he said, well, you're not going to ask for X number of engineers, are you? I was like, maybe, you know, and that X is roughly what we have today. But back then it was just like such a big number. It was like, this would be crazy to ask for that number. Yeah. So we've grown a lot, but back then it was just like inconceivable that we would reach that number. And yeah, we were like a handful back there.
Studio 4.0 was the motion editor. Mm. And we don't talk much about that anymore. I guess Compose kind of made it obsolete or clean-ish.
Less obsolete than, you know, moving from XML to Kotlin code does make a lot of things better. But it's true that for tools, I mean, it's what I was joking about with Jay earlier, right? We talked about this a lot. Because a lot of folks were using the visual editor for XML. Some folks prefer to write the code themselves. Some people prefer the editor. But it's very difficult when code is involved because, you know, you can have branches and loops, and maybe you're calling into a database or a network request. So should we run a full-blown interpreter and then run your app as part of the visual editor? I remember, I mean, you mentioned NetBeans earlier. I remember NetBeans did that. There was a round-tripping between code and the editor, but the way they solved it was they would mark off
read-only regions, yeah.
Yeah, so there were sections of code that would start with special comments saying, hey, this is read-only. So when you were in NetBeans, NetBeans would not let you edit that region, but you could open any other editor and mess with that code, and then what would happen? Who knows?
Yeah, for tools, we definitely prefer data. And so like, right. I struggle with that direction directly for Compose, but I also see that it is helpful. Right?
But
so,
previews, you know, I think the Compose previews are great because they give you like this fast feedback loop. And I think that's the key. And we do have the animation editor/preview for Compose that, you know, doesn't get you all the way to the motion editor, but it helps a lot.
I think the trick is to make the things that can be data. So Gradle did this recently, right? So we now have version catalogs. So even though dependencies could be declared in code, it's better if you put them in this TOML file. And now there are, you know, like GitHub bots and things that can like update your dependencies. And that's partially because, well, it's a well-understood data format.
Right, and you can build a UI around that, right?
Yeah.
I can't believe I'm going to say this, but you brought up Gradle. Well, we have the person who drove Gradle and probably still drives Gradle from the beginning through the integration with IntelliJ. Like, do you want to say anything about the use of Gradle?
I mean, you've been on the podcast before.
I'm
really surprised you're asking.
I am amazed and a little horrified that I'm asking, but it does seem like a good question to ask.
I do feel, yeah. I mean, Zab has been on the podcast before, but now you're the Uber TL for all of Studio, right? So the role has changed a bit.
Yes. But that's why I was shaking my head. I'm not technically leading the team that does
In Chet's eyes, but you are and you will always be Gradle.
Responsible for
the source of his nightmares.
You talked before about having Ant, and you had, you know, there was this breakdown between command line versus IDE, and then we had a move toward a incredibly full-featured build system.
All the concepts of like variants and all of that, like this, you know, the source set overrides, that's stuff that you came up with.
Yeah, and that's not in Gradle, right? So over the years, I met with a lot of developers during I/O generally who told me all about the crazy stuff that they would be doing. Like, you know, just like dealing with debug and release was difficult, right? You know, because Ant did not really deal with that, but in Android, you have to have a different signature because you don't want your signing key anyway, but you also want your app to be debuggable, which means a different version of your manifest, or at least a different flag in your manifest. And then if you want to install the debug at the same time as the release version, you need different identity for your app, so different package name. So around 2012, actually, when we started working on Studio, I started thinking about that and then came up with the build type and the product flavor stuff. And that's when, during that summer, I met with Gradle when I started thinking about another build system. I looked at Maven very briefly, and then I looked at Gradle. I met with them, and that's where we started basically, you know, prototyping stuff. And then in December, when we really moved on to IntelliJ, we already have, you know, a little bit of that working, so we are ready to, I guess we had selected it, which, you know, in hindsight is like, you know, I guess I made the decision. You know, nowadays we'd have product reviews with tons of people and VPs. And back then I was just like, yeah, we're going in this direction.
It was a lot of freedom, right?
Yeah, the landscape for at least for Java built systems was different.
Yeah.
That was 12 years ago.
Yeah.
There was not, I mean, we're not going to pick make. Things like Bazel were not around.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, that like there were internal tools, but all of those were internal. That was IP that we were not about to depend on.
Yeah, so there was very little choice. It was really like Maven was the most popular in, like, you know, in enterprise Java software.
I think there was Rake, but that was Ruby oriented.
Yeah, but like that was like good support for JVM. That was basically Gradle was brand new. It had turned, I think, 1.0 just like a few months before that, before I talked to them. But they offered us the ability to fully create a DSL, right? Like a domain-specific language with our modeling to expose the features and the concepts that we wanted. And to me, that was super attractive.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, we want to be able to model, you know, different debug versus release flavors. We can just do that. and expose that as a first-class citizen concept, not something that looks like Tacton.
And the product flavors too, right? So right. There was a common thing where people would have an app and they wanted the free version and a pro version. And so you have some, maybe some advertising in the free version and so on. So you want different dependencies.
Yeah. I made the decision and, you know.
Now, you could have looked at what the platform was doing, which 2012, I'm pretty sure we were still deeply in the world of Make.
Yep.
All we had was just a lot of Make files.
So, well, the other aspect of Gradle that was interesting, they had two things, right? They had the ability to decide, you know, how you wanted to model the software that you're building and expose that as a custom DSL. But they also had an integration with any Java-based tooling, right? So I have something called a tooling API that just allows you to go and query Gradle and get something in return. And, you know, there was no, I don't know how many years it took for JetBrains to support out-of-the-box Gradle, but when we built it, there was no mechanism to sync a project, so we had to build all of that from scratch. But Gradle had the ability for us to have, basically,
I think this came from the philosophy of let's have the same build system in the IDE and the command line. And that was to avoid all those complaints we'd had, but man, has that been painful as well. Right?
Still is.
Because basically, you know, an IDE likes to understand what's going on. And when you take that control away and it's all handled externally, we're still...
Look, if that makes you feel better, you know, I run into similar problems in the C++ world, like where even with CMake and things like this, where actually CMake, the way you work around it sometimes at CMake is a built in that will generate something else, like you can generate make files or you can generate a project file for your IDE. And
so the very,
it's never perfect.
Yeah. Like, originally, Gradle had something like that. They had an Eclipse and an IntelliJ plugin that you could just run. You had a task that they created and it would just create basically an IDEA file or something. But then, you know, JetBrains started using the proper tooling API to do it. But yeah, at the beginning, that's how they would do it, which was not great from an experience point of view.
It works on small projects.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, cool. I think we can close the Gradle topic.
That you were interested and wanted to talk more about.
Did you want to talk more about
Gradle?
It
seemed like it should be called out. That was one of the really big changes that happened with the overall architecture.
They happened together, but yeah, they are like they could have been. You know, we could have gone with the JPS built-in build system.
Well, they had, right?
JetBrains had built it, and we kept it alive for a while because we, you know, and for the partnership, we didn't want to like force people over. So it was capable.
But you know, Gradle, when you think about it, was the precursor to Compose. It was moving away from XML to code, just for the build system.
Yes. But so the one of the big parts that JPS did not work with is like there was no concept, I mentioned that earlier, of like, you know, a library, right? You know, what is a library? So we created the AR, you know, Android Archive, you know, which has a bunch of stuff in it, really, just as something that you unzip and use. But like that just did not exist before. And so even JPS, while it was there, did not really support like external dependencies. And that was another key aspect of having to deal with that. And Gradle had a lot of capabilities to help us deal with that. But yeah, there was a lot of things missing, which is crazy because that was 2012, right? That was 4 years after Android 1.0. And we still did not have like, you know, the ability to do external dependencies, which just sounds crazy today, especially like people nowadays have hundreds of external dependencies.
Wow. And I think we mentioned it, right? But like you would get the support library and it was a directory that you would install with the SDK manager and then you would copy and put it in your workspace.
But now there's so many companies that have their SDK, right? You know, like Google has plenty of them, you know, to access Google services. I'm sure all of our competitors have their own and you know, there's tons of SDKs plus all the ads SDK that you have out there.
Every time you open a Gradle project, and there's nothing to do with Gradle, right? It's like wait a few minutes for all the Maven dependencies to be downloaded.
Yeah.
Yeah, the alternative was copy paste.
Yeah,
yes, which is not great.
Yeah, we've come a long way. There were some other features too that we can't do a complete list, but I remember the profilers was a pretty big deal 1 year too. I didn't see where Gemini put it, right? But we basically thought like, hey, we need profiling, and so we built a bunch of them. You know, like memory profiling. We had the CPU. It was like the scrolling timeline. Remember? Yep. We had that UI just until about this year when we replaced it with the task-based profiling.
Still my favorite tool, actually, allocation tracker, or the replacement for what used to be allocation.
Yeah, you're
tracker.
Like still emailing the team even after you left the company. This is good. Yeah,
I am. I emailed your team or the profiler team, and I also emailed like I hit a launcher bug a few times, and I keep emailing Dan saying, hey, Dan, what about
this? You add, don't you know who I am in every one of your emails?
That's why he's not responding, actually. Yeah.
He knows who you are.
I should email from my other
email. No longer paid to talk to you.
Yeah.
So, you know, dangerous question, but any regrets about studio, like something we've done too early, too late, that you think we shouldn't have done?
I already said it earlier in the podcast, right? Which was instant run. Not the whole thing, but I feel like there was this goal to like, hey, we're going to support all the API levels back to this, like no limitations, which was basically desirable from a product perspective, but not practical from an end perspective. So, and should have pushed back harder.
Huge technical challenge, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think to me, like actually in Sunshine is kind of interesting example, because when we did it again, as you know, apply changes, we took a completely different approach, right? It's like, you know, let's support the current version of the platform and the future one, and let's work with the platform to add stuff that we need to them. And that's something that we should have done
years ago
of like, work closer with the platform, get the changes that we have to do. We've always been kind of isolated and in the past and just like, you know, following. It's like being surprised, oh, they did that, and then they're surprised of the things we are doing. And, you know,
To be fair, I think there was so much to build, you know, for instance, Android Studio and the platform itself, that it was really hard to align these kind of timelines.
Yes.
And you know, there were like, you know, there were some decisions about like support it. So, you know, we did.
But I think when we really started growing the team, we could have been, you know, like we just kept doing more the same way. Instead of saying, okay, now we have the bandwidth to go and interact more with the platform and to really build something future looking, we were always kind of catching. It's like, hey, we don't have a profiler. We need a profiler. We don't have this thing. We need these things.
The Toolkit team, the Jetpack teams, and the Tools team like interact a lot, right? Like,
yes.
Compose being a great example where from day one.
It's much better. It's much better nowadays. But like, you know, as far as regret of the last 10 plus years, to me, that's we should have done that earlier. And we just... We are just catching up all the time with things and not really having time to go and look toward the future.
So what's coming next in Android Studio? Can you talk about future releases?
No.
We still can't. I think that people who pay attention can probably guess. You know, we actually did do... I actually got to do a demo at DroidCon. So I showed this new, close your ears, Roman, AI feature for sourceless testing. Which, you know, so we've kind of given a sneak peek of that, and that's obviously something we're working on. There's all kinds of stuff happening. It's kind of an exciting time in our industry, I think.
I look forward to filing bugs.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite feature?
I think overall, I mean, it's not specific to Studio. It's more the whole IntelliJ or JetBrains ecosystem. It's just, you know, again, all the small features that are all over the place in the IDE, like the quality of the code completion, some of the inspections it does automatically. You know, one of my favorite examples, because it caught a real bug for me years and years ago when I was using it on platform, I was writing some of the layout code and I wrote something like padding left plus equals X times something, blah, 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 plus top. And, you know, it underlined the line and said, oh, you're adding a top variable to padding left. Is that what you want to do? It's like, whoa, okay, thank you. Because, you know, it's the kind of bug that's, you also waste hours figuring it out. And it's a small thing. So it's really like this philosophy of like all those little things that make your life a little easier every day that I really enjoy.
Yeah.
And you've done similar things in Studio itself, right? Like showing you the colors in the gutter when you reference a color from the resources.
We're not going to have a whole session about Studio. I'm not going to mention lint, right? Like I have to. And so, in fact, what you just mentioned, we have a bunch of things like that, like looking for.
Oh, lint sometimes one of those things. I'm like, I know when I'm doing go away thing.
Do you have any favorite features?
Not really. I'm always kind of like looking toward the cool stuff that we're going to build.
Yeah.
There's a few things that we can talk about that I'm excited. And so, you know. So
you're basically saying you're never happy.
I'm just looking toward the future. I don't look back.
I mean, that kind of makes sense because like you two are on like, it was the same thing for Toolkit. Like what were my favorite things about using the Toolkit? Well, I wasn't a user. I was the person thinking about what can we do next? Like what are the things that we're building? Those are the things you get excited about, I think, from the inside. Whereas, like, I'm more of a user of the tool, so yeah, I have features. I already mentioned it, allocation tracker memory profiler.
I think for mine it's the same as Roman. It's basically, maybe I'll do a little ad here. I gave a talk at DroidCon San Francisco last June, but it was basically the opening keynote, and I spent it on developer productivity. And the entire hour is me going through all my favorite tips and tricks. And it's like filter search. Like, that's a small thing, but once you know that every list in IDE, you can just start typing to filter,
right.
It's fantastic, right? And there's just like, there's such a long list, you know, camel humps, like you can...
Or the fact that code completion works in almost any input field as well.
Yeah, and then like you press tab to replace instead of enter to insert. There's like this is a tool that rewards investing in learning it. And once you kind of get that proficiency, it's, you know, you really...
It's called brainwashing, I think.
Could be. I probably sound like a cult member, but I really do like.
When you talk about Lint, yes, you definitely sound.
No,
like
no, this was all. I didn't even.
No, he's a cult leader.
This is basically IntelliJ. We've added some things to, you know, in some places to make it nice, like the compose editing and so on. But I think just the whole value proposition. When I use other IDEs that I won't name, I feel like, wow, you know, Studio is really great.
But it's IntelliJ, really. You just basically talked mostly about IntelliJ.
Sure, but I think you
use more than Studio, right? So it makes sense that, you know, as
yes, but you know, but I think there's quite a few things that we've been inspired and to build on top of that. I think is really really nice on our side too. So I just feel like you know, if I was doing real Android development, you know, I would have a lot of the same feelings.
And that's a totally objective opinion.
Totally. Yes. I am known to be objective.
And since usually you have feature requests, can you fix the bugs that I mentioned to you a bunch of times, please?
I'm
not going to name them here.
Okay, I forgot, so we should sync afterwards. But yes, that is what this podcast is for. And I think with that, maybe we're any parting thoughts, Sav, you know?
Not really. No, sorry.
All right, well, thank you for all your hard work.
Thinking about the future.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.